by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass smack dab in the middle of it. Grass smack dab in the middle. We are grass smack dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. Charlotte Littlefield did participate on this second hour with me, and that second hour coming up in just a few minutes was with Jeff Charlotte, and his book was so insightful. It was entitled C Street, The Fundamentalist Threat to American Democracy. And he was invited in to interact with what he eventually became called the family. And it's very, very interesting. And so it's a replay from back several years ago. But I think you'll find it interesting. The first hour, I want to thank Ronald Oliver again. And this was a book he had written a few years ago, but it was just interviewed him tonight, Saturday, August 1st. And I mean, I can't, you know, just to understand the Jonathan Pollard episode of treacherous, treasonous behavior to this country is not easy to understand. Jonathan Pollard had the ability to mobilize a great, a compassionate, dedicated movement to free him earlier than his 30 years, which he did or will complete shortly. So he's having to serve the full 30 years. And so pay special attention. If you can go back to The Secret Truth, we have it on demand after the live broadcast tonight, you'll be able to, at thesecrettruth.com, you'll be able to understand more of what he did and how treacherous and how damaging his espionage was to the United States. And there's one manual that he gave to the Israelis. We don't know who they passed that on or not. It's called the Radio Signal Notations Manual. And it's a book of all the intercepts throughout the world and their frequencies and who they're listening to. And it was when I was in the ASA, Army Security Agency, on the hill in West Berlin, Teufelsberg, we had that manual, and we could begin to understand in our area what our sphere of importance was and who we were to be intercepting and so forth. So he gave that to the Israelis, and that's probably one of the most damaging acts that he committed. There's the first hour, listen to it again. He had a courier pass for classified materials. So that's how he was able to go in and out of his job in his top secret area there that he worked in. He was originally, or I think his primary responsibility was for Caribbean counterterrorism, or, you know, and threats. And so, but he ended up just unloading, by his own description, a pile of papers 6 feet wide and 6 feet tall and 10 feet long. If you can visualize a stack of papers like that, that's basically what he passed on to the Israelis. And the Israelis had to install two high-speed copiers at the Israeli embassy just to keep up with the amount of material that he was beginning to bring out. I believe he has to stay in this country for 5 years, you know, to complete his parole. And then I think he can go to Israel. And that's probably where he's headed, to a hero's welcome, is what most people would envision. But, you know, to this country, I guess you can't characterize it that way. Exactly. Hillary Clinton is having her problems with these emails that she had this private server, she said, and now she's getting into problems where some of the emails seem to been to contain classified information, and I think the latest little ploy is to redact those parts of her emails. But is she not looking at some charges of mishandling classified information? And that's a real problem for her because it's coming out now that there are virtually hundreds of her own emails running on her own server that did contain classified information. So we have yet to see how that's going to play out. And, of course, now she's saying she's fit to serve, and there's books being written by, you know, against her and lambasting her by some of the women that her husband was trying to bed and all that, you know. But so that has yet to work itself out, and we'll just have to see how she comes out on that. But she's having a series of problems here, and I would say, in my opinion, she's not that friendly a candidate on the campaign trail. And many people, I think, are finding her very unfriendly and too controlling. And they did the ropey-dope thing up a few weeks ago up in Iowa about surrounded some reporters with a rope and trying to corral them around it. I mean, some of the things that are happening are just so absurd that it's unbelievable the way that she's being managed in here. And now she's got this Benghazi thing appearance in October. She has another problem that they have is with this Planned Parenthood. And this Planned Parenthood is no simple thing to overcome. The people, the American public in general, they'll go along with abortion, and I think many people, except for some of your very strict Christians on the right, but most people in the country, I would say the middle of the majority or whatever, on either left or right, I think believe that they should leave it to the woman. And today she has that ability to do so. That's the practical thing about it. But I think when it comes to selling parts and fetus parts or material and stuff, I think it got out of hand and out of control. And I don't think the American public in general is friendly to those kinds of going ons, and especially when they're subsidizing Planned Parenthood in the vicinity of well over $500 million. Their total budget is somewhere reported to be $1.3 billion, and of that, over $500 million is paid by the taxpayer. So I think the taxpayer out there is really paying close attention to this and saying that they don't really want their money to be used in that manner. You know, not necessarily to deny a woman an abortion, but to generate this other material that sometimes the women are not aware of that are receiving an abortion, and then they're taking some of that material there and selling it to some of these private enterprises that are making a fortune out of the dealing in these kinds of materials and so forth. Organ like trafficking and stuff like that. And I think that is really what touches a nerve with the American public. Donald Trump is continuing to gain popularity. My view on this is very simple. When you have a personality, a television personality like Donald Trump, owned for the number of years he's been owned, then he's going to attract a large following. And he has attracted a very large following. And those people like Donald Trump. Now, he's trying to translate that into political support. And this coming debate next Tuesday is going to determine where Donald Trump falls, on the side of continuing to expand his campaign with some hard-hitting, good answers to some hard questions that are posed to him, or is he going to just continue to be this attack-type person that criticizes everything, and there's a lot to criticize, but has no real solutions to offer to get this horrid mess straightened up? And it is a horrible mess that we have in this country. And it's not that simple solution to accomplish. I mean, we have all kinds of, we have this immigration. Now, that's where he began to touch a nerve, was on immigration. And many of these rhino type people, Republican in name only, were afraid to even go as far as he did with their pronouncements. But one thing about him was he put it on the line. Donald Trump did, and now he has money, and he can be independent, but only to an extent. So he still has to put forward some solutions, and we're waiting to see what kind of real solutions he can put forward. Okay, for example, let's pose a question to him. If I were one of the questioners there at this coming debate Tuesday night, Donald Trump, what's your view on a privately owned Federal Reserve? Do you believe that it should be privately owned? And do you think their policies have been good in the last few years for the general financial and economy? Things like that. I would pose really hard questions. I would pose questions about 9/11 to Donald Trump. I'd say, Donald Trump, what is your take on 9/11? Are there any unanswered questions that haven't been answered yet? Tell us what your view on 9/11 is. Now, most of these people, whoever they might be on the left or right or Democrat or Republican, and even old Bernie Sanders, he needs to be asked the same question on 9/11. Bernie, was 9/11 an inside job? Was it not? Was it a legitimate attack? Can you fail buildings with just crashes of planes into them? Or tell us what you think. The hard questions are not going to be asked like that to any of these candidates for president. That's why we can't really progress any. The degree, you could say, of corruption on multiple levels has reached such an extent that we're not being able to see how corrupt and how many levels down that this corruption goes. And it's so money-based and so money-driven that we're not being able to now reform it, because everyone involved in the government or whatever that's on the take, you could say, let's put it that way, has a lot of money to gain or lose. And mainly they have a lot of money to gain, so they begin to play the game and go along with corruption. I'll consent to your corruption, you overlook my corruption, and we'll all make money at the taxpayers' expense. And that's basically what has been going on in this country for decades. I mean, there's some reviews, and I'm going to put them up. They're up right now on my site. And so go to thesecrettruth.com and look at our site. But what I have up there is that Pete Peterson, you could say a supporter and an investment man for the Fed. He was a Federal Reserve chairman of the New York Fed. He's a money guy all the way. He's a Rockefeller, Scion, all that good stuff. And he gets up, you know, and starts making pronouncements about debt. You know what I mean? That this country has too much debt. He has a foundation now, a Peter Peterson Foundation. And they're saying some really good things. But those people that owned and controlled the Federal Reserve, they're the ones that have gotten us into some of these problems. And Greenspan is sitting up there trying to lecture to us about what we're doing wrong. You know what I mean? But on different levels. He's not really telling us about the Fed being privately owned and that they just create this money out of thin air and so forth and so on. So we're just being, you could say, just, you know, you know, really hustled. And that's one way to look at it is, over the years, I've been able to look at this thing on multi levels. And one of the levels that I began to talk years ago on was what I call being street hustled. Okay. So let's just imagine yourself in New York City, and you're walking along, and you bump into a guy, and the guy says, "Oh, excuse me, hey man, how you doing?" You know, just start talking to you. That's how they do, see. And then before you know it, he's talking about this, and, "Hey, can I buy you a cup of coffee?" The guy says, you sit down and have a cup of coffee. Before you know it, he's got some clothing that are seconds that he's got down in the garment district, and boy, he only needs a few $100s, and he could buy some suits, and then y'all could sell them down in New Jersey somewhere and double your money, or something like that. See what I mean? That's just an example of how these street hustlers work. You got to be wise and grow wise to these kinds of things. things. But also, there's a greater, more high level, I should say, hustle that's going on. And it has to do with the delusion that we experience. And when I say delusion, when you delude someone, you trick someone into doing something, or you affect a certain kinds of actions or behavior from that person that you're wanting to secure, say. It might be controlling him to give money to a church, or to give money to a charity, or to give you money, or to loan you money, or to go in and invest in some kind of a deal like this. But when we're deluded, we're not only deluded and under the, you could say, influence of individuals, but we're also deluded and under the influence of institutions that we have become members of. Now, those institutions might be a work type of place, situation, where you're working for some large corporation, and so they'll go out and train you. You know, they have training all the time. If you remember that, they always train everybody, you know, and they want to tell you the corporate story, right? Well, there again, see, that's deluding you with some kind of an idea that, boy, you're making a difference, and this corporation is making a difference, and we provide services to the public that no one else does. And those other corporations, they're not as good as we are. We're the ones. Those other corporations are no good. They're dishonest, or they're using, you know, they're puffing the truth on their product, but we really tell it like it is, but we have the superior product. But it's all like that. It's whether it's churches or political parties or corporations or some little group that you join to, you have a discussion occasionally, see. But anything that is organized like that, you could describe as cultic, see. There's a group, there's a cult group in there, see. And that basically that word, you have cults or groups or organized groups have, they're organized around a certain collection of ideas and precepts and, jointly held views about the world. And they might have a worldview that's in common. They might have a religious, viewpoint, in common. They might have some very, very dark, viewpoints that they have in common, which would be more of your occult, satanic or Luciferian type. But they're all on the hustle, and they want money from you, and they want you to worship them and bow down to them and give them money, but be subservient to them and be a slave to them. One of my little sayings I wrote recently is, I think, therefore I slave. So the minute that we're born into the world and we're beginning to process and think and start interacting with these things called my mama, my daddy, or later, you know, but it's mostly mama right there at the beginning. And we're beginning to feel our way around the world and beginning to try to understand who we are. We're a baby. We have needs. We're hungry. We want to be cuddled. We're insecure and so forth. So, at that point, then many of our parents are inducing into us their worldly view, see. That's why I came up with forgiveness as a solution to come out of this sort of state of deluded delusion and so forth. It's a means by which I think that we can really begin to overcome this delusion that we experience. And what I mean by that is that we're deluded by false ideas. We're tricked into things. For years, nobody knew the Fed was privately owned. Now they do. So there's a different idea now about these financial markets, whether it's Wall Street or so forth. But everyone is playing these little cards, the race card, the political card, the leftist card, the right card. I hate communism. I hate capitalism. I hate socialism. I hate this. I hate the hat. Everybody says, I hate. And you ask them, you say, do you still hate those people? No, I don't hate them, but I'm not going to forget. See? But in forgiveness, when you really forgive, there's less of a memory of that situation that you feel you were transgressed against and so forth. So you just have to work at it and try to do the best you can. Again, I want to thank everyone for listening out there. TheSecretTruth.com is the website, TheSecretTruth.com. I have a new book out called Be Good to Yourself. It's on Amazon. So go put in there, Be Good to Yourself, and put George Butler, and it should pop up without any problem. I wrote a book of short stories, and that's also on Amazon. You can say Christmas Stories and Carols, I think is the name of that, and that will pop up also. So you can, you know, when we get closer to Christmas, it's a good little book to give to people, and it's under $10. I think it's $8.99 or something like that. So you could buy three or four of those and give those out to, you know, cousins or aunts and uncles that you never hardly see, but you don't want to spend a fortune, but you want to give them a nice gift, see. And so that's a nice gift under $10, and then for Christmas. And then this book now, it's a year round type of helpful thing called Be Good to Yourself. And it's real simple. And it doesn't have to be complicated. We don't have to go to school and study psychology to death. We don't have to go to church and just study the scriptures to death. If we act out, if we really walk in the spirit of forgiveness and really love our neighbor and start actually doing some of those things instead of just study all this stuff to death, we would be a great deal better off, and the world would be better off too. The struggle is within us, and we just have to begin that struggle. So anyway, I want to thank you for listening again, and tune back in next Saturday night every 7 to 9 o'clock. Thank you for listening. Good night.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. This is George Butler along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
Charlotte, how are you doing? Okay. How's the weather up there? Okay.
It's a beautiful fall up here in the Midwest. I hope you guys are doing well down there in Texas.
Okay. Our guest tonight is coming to us from Salt Lake City. So it's the miracle of high tech, I guess. Jeff Charlotte is the author of C Street, The Fundamentalist Threat to American Democracy. He's written some other things along the same lines, and he's also author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, another national best-selling narrative history. But let's let him tell us a little bit more about himself. Welcome to our program, Jeff Charlotte.
Hi, George. Hi, Charlotte. Good to be here.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah,
you've written quite a bit. In fact, I believe, did you not do an internship at C Street there, or was that the Cedars?
Well, in my first book on this subject, The Family, I describe living with this group, The Family, the oldest and most influential Christian right organization in Washington, for a little less than a month, something I wrote about first for Harper's Magazine. And in that capacity, I was, it wasn't an internship. I was just sort of living in, with them in a group home they had for sort of young men who are being groomed for future leadership. And I met a number of the politicians involved and, was sent over to C Street at times to serve. And, that was my introduction to the group. And then moved on and, discovered they dumped about 600 boxes of documents, in the Billy Graham archives and, decided to write about it. And been writing about it for some years in Harper's and Rolling Stone magazine where I also work. And,
fascinating.
To try and dig up this whole story of this, a different kind of fundamentalism, not the pulpit pounders, not the Bible thumpers, but the self-described avant-garde of American fundamentalism, and that's who The Family is.
Right. There have been scandals that have been unfolding in the last several years or so. Has this created a lot of attention to this particular group, especially the C House there? And is not C House, is that on C Street, which, I should say C Street, is that along the avenue there in Washington, D.C., where all the lobbyists' office?
You're thinking of K Street. It's not too far from there.
K Street, I'm sorry.
The C Street House is a three-story red brick townhouse. It's registered as a church, which makes it tax-exempt, and the family uses it to provide subsidized housing to congressmen. It's located just across the street from the Library of Congress, down the street from Congressional Office Building, Supreme Court. It's a nice location. You've got congressmen living there, Christian college women providing maid service, cook and everything. And last summer in 2009, it became famous because of a number of Republican sex scandals. First, you had Senator John Ensign, fourth-ranking Republican Ensign of Nevada, who confessed to an extramarital affair. These were all guys who, real family values guys, always hitting the drum of morality, and it turns out they had a challenge with it themselves. Next was Governor Mark Sanford, Republican of South Carolina, and a even brighter presidential prospect, a guy who's, you know, thought to be sort of the head of the pack for 2012 consideration. And he was doing well until he redefined the Appalachian Trail as leading all the way into his mistress's arms in Argentina. Listeners may recall he said he was away hiking on the Appalachian Trail, and in fact he was in Argentina with his mistress. And third was Congressman Chip Pickering, Mississippi, former Congressman Chip Pickering, who actually rendezvoused with his mistress in the C Street House. His mistress was a lobbyist, a telecom lobbyist. He became a lobbyist. And all these guys had this connection. Ensign lived there. Pickering had lived there, and Sanford went there for spiritual counsel. He even sent his wife there to have the men of C Street explain to her her wifely responsibility to this man who of a weak commitment to his marriage. And in her testimony, Jenny Sanford describes being told that she should not present a challenging voice to him, that was something for men to decide. But meanwhile, she was to keep him sexually satisfied because he has elected for office. He was anointed for office by God. He had big responsibilities. So you see the sexism, the arrogance of power that was sort of defining C Street. And I should say it's not just those guys. There's a lot of Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina lives there. Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma lives there. Senator Jim Inhofe, also of Oklahoma, boasts about the political meetings he holds there. A number of other congressmen have cycled through the C Street House.
You know, have not all the great thinkers over the millenniums talked about the ego problem and this arrogance of ego that men in power seem to attain? I mean, it's just that they lose control. Is that not true?
I think that is a question beyond my expertise. Certainly these men lost control, but the story to me that's important about the C Street House is not that these guys are family value so-called guys who were messing around on their wives. You know, adultery is no good, but I'm just not interested in other people's, you know, their failings are their own. What is important about this is the way in which two things. One, the way in which these guys are interfering with other people's lives, other people's ability to make decisions about who they love and want to be with, even as they don't hold themselves to that standard. And two, the function that C Street played in covering up these affairs. So, for instance, the Senator Ensign scandal, Senator Coburn acted as a middleman to arrange payments to the mistress's family. That's now the subject of a Justice Department investigation. You take that whole mess, and what I did in the new book, C Street, is I took that and I followed the money and the ideas out from C Street and out into the world. What is the effect they are having? I mean, this sounds nasty and sleazy, but what effect does this have on the broader world? And I looked especially at foreign affairs. I looked at the ways in which Senator Inhofe, for instance, is traveling overseas on the taxpayer's dime to, as he puts it, to, quote, promote the political philosophy of Jesus as taught to him by the family. And he's doing that on our dime. He doesn't believe in separation of church and state. He calls it the phoniest idea. But then you got to say, well, what do they mean by the political philosophy of Jesus? And let me give you a quote here again. You can hear this online, the sermons online. Doug Coe, the longtime leader of the group, leader of the family, the group behind the C Street House, describing what he means by Jesus. Says, you know how Jesus, this is a quote, you know how Jesus said you got to put him before mother, father, brother, sister. That's a scriptural citation. He says, that's what Hitler, Lenin, Mao taught the kids. Mao even had the kids killing their own parents, but it wasn't murder, you see. It was for building the new nation, building the new kingdom. Now, he's not saying that he likes Mao or Hitler. He says, these are terrible men. These are evil men. He likes the methods, not their ends, but the methods. He aspires to what the family in its early days called totalitarianism for Christ. That's a dangerous, dangerous idea, and when they put it into practice in domestic policy here in the United States or in foreign affairs, they pursue a private and very aggressive religious agenda using taxpayer dollars. That's when they've crossed the line.
Right. What I found interesting in doing the research for this program and your interview was that this National Prayer Breakfast is not just one morning where they have a breakfast. It's a whole week of activities that they hold, and they bring people in from all over the world. So this is turned into a network, a power network, but using Jesus Christ as a facade. Would that not be accurate?
That might be accurate. I'm hearing some music coming out of that. Does that mean we're going to a break?
We're going to go to a break. We've got about 10, 15 seconds to go. But we'll come back and get into that in just a second. But thank you for being with us, and we'll be right back. Jeff Charlotte, thank you. Author of the C Street Fundamentalist Church Prayer. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host.
Welcome back to our guest, Jeff Charlotte. Jeff, I'd like to give out your website to the listening audience. That's Jeff and Charlotte. It's spelled SHARLETT.com. And Jeff, not to diverge too far from the serious matters that we're discussing, I'm curious about your last name. What is your last name? What's its origin?
It's Jewish.
It's Jewish?
Yeah.
Oh.
Jewish on my father's side, and Christian on my mother's side.
I see. Yeah, I have a lot of people attempt to spell my name S-H-A-R-L-E-T.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to tell people it's the French, it's the C-H-A-R-L, and as far as that goes. But I just wanted to introduce to the listening audience that you've got a spectacular array of information available at your website, jeffcharlotte.com. You seem to be a superior communicator of strategic important information, and so I'd like to turn the conversation back over to you gentlemen and see where you were going. So thank you.
Yeah, Jeff, this National Prayer Breakfast, is that one of the family's national annual type events? And was it 3,500 plus guests there? I mean, that's a big deal, isn't it?
It is a very big deal. This is one of the stories I tell in the book, C Street, Fundamentalist Threat to American Democracy. The National Prayer Breakfast was created in 1953 by this organization and has gone on since. You know, back when it was created, they had the idea that they wanted to consecrate the nation's leadership to Christ. They didn't believe in the First Amendment. The First Amendment that says Congress shall establish no law. Which will make no law establishing regarding the establishment of sedition. I'm mangling the First Amendment. That's shame on me. Congress shall make no law regarding the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Well, they didn't really care for that, and they wanted to consecrate the nation's leadership to Christ. And they went to Franklin Roosevelt and said, "Would you be our guest at this thing?" And he said no. Then they went to Harry Truman and they said, "You know, would you be our guest?" And he said no. And then they went to Eisenhower, and Eisenhower said no as well, but as Billy Graham tells the story in his memoir, he owed political favors to evangelicals. He agreed to go. He said, "I hope this doesn't become a tradition," and of course it did. It did become a tradition. Today, people going to the prayer breakfast think it's a public event. Your invitation comes on congressional letterhead. If you're a reporter like me, you RSVP to the White House. But the reality is this is a private sectarian religious event. And the story I tell in the book, in C Street, is of the organization behind it that uses the event as the kind of linchpin of a really massive week-long lobbying fest. You've got the president always speaks, president who's going to say they're against prayer. Most of Congress attends, about 4,000 people, world leaders from all over. And as I report in the book, when you look at who those world leaders are, the delegations from foreign nations, most often headed by defense ministers who are there because they understand the function of this thing as a kind of lobbying festival. So it's an abuse of the First Amendment, and frankly it's something that should bother Christian folks just as much as secular folks, because it's an abuse of their faith. It's really a desecration of the idea of prayer.
Jeff, there seems to be a large portion of the American population that are under the impression that America, it was intended to be a Christian theocracy, much like the Islamic theocracies, pseudo-democracies that we see in the Middle East, much like Iran or the other countries. What are your thoughts about, do you think that that type of illusion has been spread throughout our country?
Yeah. I mean, you know, frankly, when you've got folks like Senator Jim Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma, part of the group, says separation of church is the phoniest idea there ever was. Well, what he's saying is that the First Amendment of our Bill of Rights of the Constitution provides us all our freedoms. He's saying that's the phoniest idea there ever was. The Constitution, we have to remember, is what you call a godless document. That doesn't mean that it's against God. It means that the word God does not appear in it. And the reason it doesn't appear in it is because when we go back, we don't have to do any guessing. We don't have to do any debating or arguing on this point because they had that debate at the Constitutional Convention, the founders, and they said, this is not a country, this is not a Christian nation. That came up for debate, and they rejected it. It has to be open to everybody. It has to be based on what one of the, this is a sort of a pre-founder, one of the really important guys of American history, not remembered as well as he should be, Roger Williams. Roger Williams, founder of Rhode Island, but more important, the founder or the man who gave to us this idea of liberty of conscience, freedom of religion, the freedom of religion that guarantees that that everybody, fundamentalists, liberals, everybody can have their free expression. And, you know, that's the story I'm trying to tell in this book, Z Street, is how part of our political leadership has really lost hold of that. And what they do when they abandon the idea of religious freedom for everybody. And you're right, a lot of Americans do think that this is supposed to be a Christian nation. All they need to do is read the Constitution.
Let me ask you this. This is a little off to the side, but what about AIPAC, the Israel's lobby? As far as how much time the AIPAC lobby gets, as opposed to in comparison to how much time the family, the Christian Right, the C Street gang gets, what would be the comparison there on the access to the halls of power?
Well, I'm not quite sure how to answer that question. AIPAC is of course very powerful. The NRA is very powerful. The oil industry is very powerful, and so is the family. I mean, access to the halls of power. When we're talking about the family, we're talking about Senator Jim DeMint, Senator John Thune, Senator Tom Coburn, and Senator Sam Brownback, senators,
right.
They're not access to the halls of power.
They are the power. Right. Well, the reason why I pick AIPAC specifically is because they are a, quote, Jewish nation. I mean, they are a religious based lobby group, just like C Street would be.
Jeff,
let me ask you a question. Is the family closely aligned with AIPAC?
No. It's a Christian fundamentalist organization. Look, I'm no defender of AIPAC.
Okay.
I'm not either.
I'm no defender. Let me speak here. I'm no defender of AIPAC. What I'm trying to say here is that there's more than one power base. Now, there's an important difference between, there's an important difference between AIPAC and C Street. While I'm no defender of AIPAC, I happen to disagree, as I think many American Jews strongly disagree with their approach. The reason I can disagree, the reason it's easy for me to disagree is because I know who they are. I know what they do. They're registered as a lobby. The difference here, this isn't a left-right issue. This is a transparency issue. The family is not registered. As the leader of the group, in a sermon that you can now hear online, the leader of the group, Doug Coe, says the more invisible you can make your organization, the more influence it will have. You know, that's true. That's why we have lobbying laws and disclosure laws. That's why I'll go out there and I'll defend fundamentalist organizations. If they're registered and out in the open, we can have that debate, that public debate.
Right. Can you come back for one more segment after this break?
Sure.
We're going to take another break here, and then we'll come back and flesh this out. And I think C Street there, they've been disallowed some tax-free benefits also recently. We'll get right back with you. Thank you for being with us, Jeff. We'll be right back. Thank you. Hello, Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm Joyce Butler along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back to our guest, Jeff Charlotte at jeffcharlotte.com. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hi, Charlotte. Good to be back.
Yeah, you make a good point, Jeff, in the sense that AIPAC is a registered, political action committee, while the family, they specifically state in their material that they want to be, the more invisible they are, then the more powerful or more influential they can be. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's it exactly. You know, to go back to those First Amendment matters that are so important, folks out there who may take issue, remember the late Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson or Jim Dobson, the Christian Coalition, they don't like those organizations. There's folks out there don't like those organizations and see them as undemocratic, I mean democratic with a small d. The reason that we can disagree with those organizations or with AIPAC or anything is because we know that they exist. That, you know, when you think of democracy as like a public square, everyone gets to come in and say their piece and make their case. You do that in the public square, then we can disagree with you. We know where you stand. It's the organizations that really work behind the scenes that are I think, the threat to democracy. Now, I happen to disagree with AIPAC very strongly. But, again, that's the whole point. I can do that. I know where they are. If I don't like AIPAC, I know the problem is I can tell my congressman to say, I want you to vote against their approach. That's what we kind of have to remember when we look at these powerful Washington players.
Well, what is it about AIPAC that that you would not agree with their approach, or what? What would you?
I got to tell you, if this, I thought we were going to be talking about my book, C Street.
Let's do that.
I
have a comment.
Why don't you tell me what you disagree with about AIPAC?
Well, what I see is this, basically, that's going on. These are some of the dynamics, and it actually addresses and speaks specifically and directly to what you've written, I believe, and I think you would buoy into that and support it, is that the fundamentalist crowd and the Mennonism or the end times thinking, all that, is very closely aligned with the state of Israel and in support of Israel. Would you not agree?
There's a trend called Christian Zionism that indeed is a Christian right trend that is indeed closely aligned with Israel. Yeah, that's correct.
But the Christians in general in America, I think, are generally in support of Israel. Well, that would play well for AIPAC if they're going to lobby for their interest in Congress, because the Christians as a community together encompass a great number of people.
Israel is a community together. You invited me on the show. Israel is a community, encompasses a great number of people. It encompasses not just Netanyahu, who is essentially, as far as I'm concerned, responsible for war crimes in the occupied territories, but also encompasses great novelists, great artists, great thinkers like David Grossman, who take a firm stand against this. So I don't like to lump Israel as a solid entity any more than I like to lump, when I'm out here talking about Christian fundamentalism and political fundamentalism, that is, I've always been encouraged that some of the strongest support I get is from self-described Christian fundamentalists who are just as opposed as anybody else to dishonesty in their political leaders, to the distortion of the Christian faith. So, I kind of resist any kind of monolithic explanation
Here's what I would say is that we have both America and Israel have their leadership appearance in many cases. Is that not true? The corrupt leadership sometimes. See, that's the problem. The people want to do good out here, but sometimes that leadership, like you point out in your book here, they become very corrupt and very self-centered. And I think some of the leadership in Israel, like you pointed out earlier a few seconds ago, they have become corrupt too. So if the people are trying to get together and establish some kind of friendship there across these borders, I think. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go.
With power and defense and all this spending, it destroys that. It goes against that friendship.
I'm with you. Amen.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, in other words, it's like Solzhenitsyn said, the battle line runs through the heart of every man. So what you were saying earlier, I think, spoke directly to it, is that these men have not overcome their own inner battles and conflicts. So they're out there in sexism, whatever, sex escapades or whatever. whether they're in England or America or Israel, it's happening all over the world. But men have not been able to control themselves in many ways like that.
That's true. That's true, definitely.
Jeff, you've done a great service to the world by writing the book, C Street and the Family, and I want to encourage everybody in the listening audience to go to Jeff Charlotte, that's SHARLET.com. Look at your articles, look at your blog, look at your books. You've got a great body of work already, and it's been a real honor and privilege having you with us. I'm not saying goodbye right now. I just wanted to make sure that you know that we feel very glad that you've joined us, and we support your work. And I can't think of a more important topic than to bring out the underbelly of the fundamentalism of happening within America that's undocumented, and it's going on. Perhaps somehow they need to become registered, or this. We need to show this to the light of day, and your work is doing a great effort towards that.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Charlotte.
In fact, here's a book review and quoting directly off of the Amazon site, talking about the family and this network of men. It says that heavily financed, multi-layered organization has been operating for decades and is today actively implanted within the U.S. military and so forth. And evidently, they are concerned a lot with defense, is that not? And they make a lot of money, I guess, by networking together in this defense area.
Yeah. I mean, that's been one of the real troubling aspects of this. And in fact, in the book, I tell the story of going to Uganda. Uganda is a East African nation, very newly oil rich, and of a lot of interest to a lot of American politicians. John Ashcroft has been over there on behalf of the C Street Gang and Senator Jim Inhofe and a lot of these folks going over there and looking at this. And I spoke to the leader of one of the leaders of the organization over there, a politician named David Bahati, who had done his political training in the United States, studying with the family, among others. And David Bahati is author of a piece of legislation called the Anti-Homosexuality Bill. What this bill will do is provide death penalty for homosexuality, 7 years in prison for what they call promotion, which is to say, just sort of talking about it like we are right now, 3 years in prison if you're heterosexual and you know a homosexual person, and you don't report that person within 24 hours, regardless, maybe it's your relative or whatever, 3 years in prison. So it's the most draconian anti-gay bill in America. And it became a kind of a political liability for a lot of the American politicians who were connected to it. And so they said, well, that goes too far. That's not what we meant. That goes too far. So I went over there to Uganda, and I was talking with David Bahati, and he said, they've assured me, though, that we still have a strong relationship. They can't follow me in this cause, but we can still cooperate together on, I'm just direct quoting here, on other biblical issues like defense contracts.
Oh.
Defense contract is a biblical issue, by their reckoning. I guess there are a lot of swords and slingshots in the Bible, but I don't know about tanks and these kinds of big weaponry deals, which is, in fact, what is happening in Uganda now is a big military buildup with American support.
Jeff, are you familiar with the database called Little Sis?
I'm not. Say it again. I didn't quite catch it.
Okay. Well, the concept, you know, how you have Big Brother. There's a database that's been started about 2 years ago, and it's called Little Sis. And essentially, it's a place to go and register important players, elites, people in power, their associations, what they're doing. It's not derogatory in any way. It's just a way for those of us in the know to become more educated and to connect the dots better.
What a great idea.
Yeah, and it's called littlesis.org.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, and the people that you find of concern, it would just be such a gift to all Americans and the whole world, frankly, if you would contribute to littlesis.org. I've made a couple of contributions, but I'm not near as well-read and as far-flung as you are. But
I will check it out. And I got to say, it sounds like the music's on, so I will thank you for having me on the show. I've got to run to my next appointment.
Thank you very much, Jeff Charlotte. We certainly appreciate your endeavors and your work in this area. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, good night. Charlotte will be back wrapping up that final segment of this hour. Nobody see you later. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield. Well, that was a good guess.
That was quite an interview, was it not, Charlotte?
Yeah, it was wonderful. And I just, let's plug it again. Ladies and gentlemen out there in the listening audience, please go to jeffcharlotte.com. And he spells his last name Charlotte, Charlette.com. I think he is writing some crucial, important, inside information. And he seems to be a spectacular communicator, George. This was a gold mine.
He did make a point that some of the fundamentalists are some of his biggest supporters.
Well, but yes, that's interesting. And he made some very good points about, you know, not being registered. And these are the power elite that need to, we need this transparency. And I was so grateful that he heard me when I recommended the littlesys.org database. Because
yeah.
If we get people like Jeff Charlotte's books, and we start profiling these people on the littlesys.org database, and all of us 9/11 truthers, truth seekers, political activists, all the people that are working to transform the world for the better, we can better communicate with this database, littlesys.org. It's not derogatory. It's just the facts. You know, are they on the Council of Foreign Relations? You know, have they been affiliated with the Club of Rome? What are their activities? This is like our public intelligence gathering tool where we can quickly ascertain the networks and who's doing what and help each other deal with the power elite who are not serving the public in general, the little people. And so things are changing, and I was just very grateful that he heard me when I mentioned littlesys.org. So,
right, I seem to disagree with him. You know, when he said that AIPAC and the family were not closely aligned, I think they have some very, very general concepts that they would agree on. In fact, Jerry Falwell was very close to Israel.
Well, I agree, George. You didn't have an opportunity to expand on that thread.
I know. We had to stay with the book, you know, and we got off a subject there, topic there a little bit.
But anyway,
it's such a large topic to talk about, subject. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And I think had you two had the time to take that thread, I believe you probably would have had a meeting of the minds on.
It's just that this is not something simple to talk about. This book said C Street, talking about the family, but it's a very large system of, political action committees, and this one is not registered, but it does the same thing, the family does. But that, you know what I really, in my research, I really got to see on this National Prayer Breakfast, they bring in, like you said, 4,000 people. It's actually sponsored by Congress, but with the family running it and organizing it.
See, and that misguides people to think that this is a theocracy, a Christian theocracy. We are not.
Well,
we are a representative democracy.
Here's what we have, though. The first settlers were Huguenots and Puritans. So they were Protestants because they were being persecuted in Europe and they wanted freedom of religion and worship. See what I mean?
But the point is.
So you can't ignore that totally either, see?
Yeah, but he made the point quite clear, you know, there is no God, you know, it's the art of the contract. And the art of the contract in our Constitution is, so far the best that humanity's been able to come up to. And frankly, religion was withheld because in the Middle Ages, the church was the state.
That's where we didn't even have time to get involved in. There's a concept called Dominionism. Okay, and when we were in Houston down there at the Republican Convention in 2008, within Texas and within the nation, there has been a very strong contingency of Dominionist Christians that have been very actively political. See, and so they believe that the word should be enacted in the law in some cases. That would be an extreme case. They certainly believe in living out a Christian life in their public life if they were a senator or elected official. See what I mean? Now, I believe the family professes the same things, but then they succumb to the same problems and scandals of sex and everything else.
sexism, greed.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so what are they doing? They're just kidding each other. Everybody goes around it that I see, and they talk a good story, but they don't walk the walk, right?
Well, you know, George, yeah, and you know what we haven't even begun to get into is the mafia. The mafioso and the Catholic Church's influence on America and the world, that is a, I mean, we could do a year-long series on that one.
Well,
and,
if you look at World War II, and this is a good example, the rat lines were run by the church to bring Nazi scientists to this country and to South America and to protect them. Now, that's pretty straightforward to me.
And it wasn't.
And that tells a lot right there, I believe.
And it wasn't that long ago that the church was the state. The church beheaded you, burned you at the stake, controlled your beliefs, controlled what you read. And to think that it has just, you know, gone off quietly into the sunset would be very ignorant and naive on our part. No, the church, in its various manifestations, is alive and well in 2010. Yes, it does a lot of good humanitarian work, but it is tied to the money. It's tied to the power structure. It's very much entangled. We got some serious religious.
Well, I see two things, Charlotte. Basically, the real motivating factors were religious and political. The religious thing with the Protestants, the Huguenots, the Puritans wanting to establish their own religion and religious freedom. The second thing was to break off from the monarchy, see what I mean, of England.
But that
came later on after, the war and everything else, see what I mean? But it was a monarchy that the founding fathers rebelled against.
Well, and you had the Church of England rebelling against the Vatican.
That's right. Now, here's an interesting and a very cogent point, is that the monarchy was receiving their authority from God, the king, right? You see what I'm trying to say? So it's just another hustle down on the way to the form of truth. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, what's really frightening, though, is when you dig in.
And if you look at our founding fathers, they wanted to set up something where all men were kings, not a king over men.
Right.
You see what I mean? And
absolutely.
So that is the beauty of what they started out. Now it's being reversed by all this federal power and everything and money, see?
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of esoteric information that would be helpful to understand and to know when you talk about these things. Christianity is an ancient form of sun worship. Judaism is an ancient form of Saturnian or Saturn worship. We're talking astrotheology here. A lot of what we consider today to be our sacred spiritual religions have been handed down to us over the thousands of years. And if you are truly into comparative religion and you're willing to do the homework, you can discover a lot about the scriptures, the Bibles, all the sacred scriptures from all over the world. And it's definitely...
Well, there is something to that, Charlotte. We've latched on. Of course, our motto is, our little motto here, or our little slogan, is through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. Now, that saying is not limited just to Christians benefiting, but the atheists, the agnostics, the secular humanists. If they start really forgiving themselves and others, they too will benefit along with the Christians.
Well, and forgiveness is a human trait. It's a human action. It's not something that requires an invisible God.
Yeah, this is proactive, and it's something that you can do yourself for yourself.
And if you don't live with a forgiving heart, you end up in a cycle. I've heard it explained recently, like, you know, you're on top, you're joyful, you're winning, and then you're losing the battle, and you're
whatever. Now, I posed a question to Jeff earlier about ego, but he seemed to think it was too deep or something, was it? Or not?
Well, George, I think people's interpretation of that word is quite broad, and I don't know that he understood your definition of the word ego. Do you want to open the phone lines for the next hour? I've got a lot of...
Yeah, we're going to have open lines, and what's that number?
Oh, you had to ask me, didn't you, George?
It's 1-800-259-5791. 1-800-259-5791.
We'll look forward to it on the other side of the break. We'll see you there.
We're going to have some updates, too, on some voter U.S. Supreme Court appeals.
And news,
Supreme Court
9/11 news.
Well,
and some 9/11 news.
Okay, thank you, Charlotte, for being with me this evening. Our esteemed co-host, this is George Butler, The Secret Truth. Be right back. Thank you, Rachel, and all those good hands at GCN, too. Love all y'all up there. Okay.
Oh,
yeah, you betcha. Brady, even Brady.
Love y'all.
He had to see it a little bit, too, man. Thank you, Brady.